come ashore?
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
Hello again, I am Mark Suddeth, and this is Stories from the Hurricane Highway. Glad you could tune in once again. We are all the way up to episode 4 now of season 4, and in this episode I'm going to tie up a few loose ends from 2009, and then we're going to jump in feet first to 2010, a very busy year, a lot going on in the year 2010. But first, a look back as we again kind of wrap things up, a couple of things that I had gone back and thought deeper about. And I was like, oh yeah, I want to talk about that more. Maybe I didn't talk about it at all just yet. And that's, again, some loose ends I want to tie up from 09. So remember, way back in 2005, we began streaming live video from the vehicle. That would be the Chevy Tahoe. We were using Windows Media Encoder. Windows Media Video is how you would watch it. And then we developed the remote cams in 05. Also using Windows Media Encoder and a laptop and so forth and so on. And that's how we did it, 05, 06, 07, 08. By 09, and I don't remember how it came about, but in 2009, probably something that Paul introduced me to, knowing him, I found Ustream, and that is spelled with a U, the letter U, stream, all one word, Ustream. And it was a social media company streaming platform that had developed originally as a way for military members to keep in touch with each other using a laptop and any kind of a broadband connection with any webcam. It was just flash-based. It would detect your webcam. You would allow it in the permissions of your browser, and off you go. And you could stream from anywhere. And this, again, was set up originally by a couple of gentlemen. I believe they were in the military. And then it developed into a startup company, a social media company. They were eventually bought by IBM. And anyway, that's a little bit of a history there of Ustream, the company. But we were using it in 09. And the big and only real big, you know, really the only thing in 09, of course, was Ida, Hurricane Ida that came into the Gulf Coast there, dying out, as I talked about in a previous episode. It transitioned to extratropical or whatever, post-tropical, as it made landfall near Gulf Shores. Watkins and I were there, and we were using Ustream. And Ustream was nice because, again, you could just plug in whatever your webcam source was. For us in the Tahoe, we had the Sony Vaio, and it would be the Firewire cable. And it didn't matter. Ustream would recognize it, and the flash encoder that they had built into the Ustream engine would work, and it would stream, and it was great. And it worked beautifully. Didn't have to have a separate encoder and all that stuff. And it just played in your browser as a flash FLV file, .FLV, flash video, I guess is what that is. And then the bullet cams would do the same thing. From the remote cams, we could still use the laptops. We just didn't have to use Windows Media Encoder. You would pull up my Ustream account, go in, create a camera, as it was called, or a stream instance, and it would pull it up, and off we were streaming. It was great. So that was in 09, and it was also in 2009 that I began the Hurricane Outlook and Discussion video series. Yeah, way back in 2009. That was one of the things that I wanted to do in 09 as a benefit exclusively for our premium services subscribers. And so the way that I did it, and I'm glad I remembered this and didn't let it slip by that it didn't get discussed. I wanted to make sure I brought this up. There's a lot to remember, by the way. Think about my entire career here coming up on 30 years. There's a lot of details. And here's one of them. So the original Hurricane Outlook and Discussion videos were terrible compared to where they are now. They were done using a couple of laptops. I would have one laptop that had the different graphics or web pages or whatever it was that I was going to show. And then I had a camera, a video camera, on a very small desktop tripod that would look at that laptop, and then it would feed that into a digitizer that would then go into a second laptop that had a microphone and a switcher, I believe, that would go into the Ustream platform. It was very convoluted, and that's how I did it. And so it was just this weird, you know, like you could tell, like it was just looking at the laptop screen. Now, of course, it's all screen captured in high definition, and, you know, all these years later, it's gotten much better. And it was on Ustream, and I would do it live, and I think it was like at 2 p.m. on whatever, I tried to do them every day, I guess. I don't remember the frequency back in 09, and unfortunately, I can't find any of the original Hurricane Outlook and discussions. They're not saved anywhere. I checked my YouTube channel to see if I had put any on there, and the first one that I could find on YouTube that I did was in 2012, and we'll get to that in a bunch of episodes from now. But anyway, they were awful, you know, again, compared to how they are now. And they didn't really get a lot of views because I was, you know, limiting them to our premium services subscribers, which we only had a couple of hundred or so. And remember, those were all annual. Everybody got billed one time. So there wasn't a bunch of engagement or whatever. But yeah, that was all part of 09. And we would continue that into the year 2010. But I just wanted to kind of summarize that for you and make sure we didn't miss those points. We're streaming on Ustream in 09, and that was the year that we started the Hurricane Outlook and Discussion series. All right, so now let's jump in to 2010, all right? 2010, again, was a big year. It would be my second full year of, I guess really starting the third full year, if you think about it. Lowe's canceled the partnership at the end of 07. So 08, I was on my own. 09, on my own. So yes, this would be the start of the third year. And I was making progress, you know, staying in the game. Started 2010 on a very positive note. In fact, I'm going to read from the HurricaneTrack.com homepage. Luckily, there is the Wayback Machine, or also called the Internet Archive. And I'm going to tell you what I was talking about there on January 1st, 2010. I did a blog about it, and that got archived here over at the Wayback Machine. A really neat portal, by the way, where you can go and look up literally billions of web pages. And fortunately, there's a bunch stored from HurricaneTrack.com. All the elements are there and everything. It's pretty cool. So we get a glimpse into the past from the Wayback Machine. But yes, 2010 started off with a lot of optimism. Again, I had survived the first couple of years of being without a major funding partner and switched over to having a minor funding partner. I was very grateful for that, though. Had All Roads Sat out of San Diego still supporting what I was doing there in 2010. In fact, they would help me to go to the Florida Governor's Conference and the National Hurricane Conference. So I got to attend both of those conferences in 2010, which was good. It was good to be out there and active and attending these meetings. I wasn't presenting, but I was certainly learning and interacting and networking with various people at these conferences. So I'd get to do that. 2010 was a very busy hurricane season. We'll talk about that in a future episode. Spoiler alert, though, no hurricanes in 2010 made landfall in the United States. One of them, Earl, came close, and we'll talk about Earl as well. And but other than that, 2010, big season, but nothing hit the United States that was of hurricane intensity. The other thing that happened in 2010 was the infamous BP / Deepwater Horizon disaster in the Gulf of Mexico in the spring of 2010. And it turns out the Gulf, in fact, I even show this on a future blog post that I'll talk about in this episode too. The Gulf was very cold in 2010 relative to average. And I remember at the National Hurricane Conference, Bill Reed, the director of the National Hurricane Center in 2010, he mentioned how cold the Gulf was. And I think the National Hurricane Conference was in April. And he said something like, "Don't worry, the big microwave in the sky," referring to the sun, of course, "will heat it up in no time, and it'll be plenty warm by the time August rolls around." And I'll never forget this, how he put that, "the big microwave in the sky." So let's go back. That's a little bit of a summary of what we'll discuss in the year 2010 through the next couple of episodes. But let's take a look now at what I was talking about. I must have stayed up and written up this blog post. By the way, 2010, I was still doing everything in HTML. And that's hypertext markup language. It's just a coding process for building web pages. And HurricaneTrack.com, since the very beginning in 99, was coded by hand. And it still is today. There was a period of a few years, 2012 through, I don't remember, 17 or 18, somewhere around there. We did use WordPress, but we'll talk about that later. And from 99 through about 2012, and then most recently, these last few years, it has gone back to being just basic HTML code. It's just simpler that way, in my opinion. Not very advanced, but I would literally write up the blog posts in the code instead of doing it on a web page where you can insert graphics and whatever. It's all done by hand, and I still do that today. It's actually a little bit easier, thanks to some of our supporters that have helped me out with a different way of doing it. But anyhow, it was done by hand back then and mostly still done by hand today. Handcrafted for your enjoyment. That's how it was. So I must have been up all the way to midnight at the end of 09, into 2010, celebrating the new year because, bam, I hit the upload button on FTP there. That's a file transport protocol. That's how we upload stuff to the site. I was ready to go. So, yeah, it says updated 12 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, January 1st. 2010. So, you know, we're talking 13 years ago. Wow. So I said, welcome to 2010. Here are our plans for the year ahead. In the first paragraph, I kind of, you know, happy new year to everybody, so forth and so on. And then the next paragraph, I'll talk about a big thanks to our corporate partners. We had Allroad, SAT, and of course, Sprint, which is now T-Mobile. But Sprint was still supporting our project by donating the phones. I didn't have a phone bill. And of course, the air cards, we were still using air cards. You would plug those into the laptops, these PCM cards, or eventually we got these USB dongles. A few years later, we had transitioned over to hotspots, but that's still a ways down the road, a couple years away or so. And we had Sprint and Allroad SAT supporting the project. Allroad SAT, of course, as I mentioned, provided me with a monthly check, a monthly support pledge, whatever, sponsorship. And that was very, very generous and very helpful in keeping me in the game. It helped my family. And Chris, the owner, would support other stuff. You know, like I said, the conferences. You know, I needed a couple $1,000 to be able to travel to those conferences. And he supported that as well. So that was very important and very meaningful to me. What else? So the next paragraph, I'll talk about what are we going to do differently in 2010? First of all, we learned about the power of social media during Ida in November, our one and only field mission of 09 to the Alabama coast, and then, of course, in the North Carolina Outer Banks. And this showed us the true power of social media and networking. Now, I'm going to stop here just for a moment. Remember, in 09 and into 2010, social media was really starting to take off. We had Twitter and Facebook becoming more mainstream, a lot more companies mentioning, find us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, become a fan, that's what it was back then, like us, whatever. I think the likes came later, Zuckerberg and company changed it. YouTube, you know, very big, of course. Ustream, like I mentioned. So I was really starting to sink my teeth into and work with social media and networking, and especially Twitter. My Twitter grew fairly quickly. So that's what I'm talking about in this paragraph. So I continue on with this writing here. Through the use of Ustream.tv, Facebook, and Twitter, we had thousands of people engaged for hours at a time. I'm talking about Ida here, the 09 Ida, of course. Many, many thousands more in the 2021 version of Ida, but we get to that later. So we did that as we traveled to our locations as Ida approached landfall. The interactivity was unprecedented and has allowed us to literally connect with so many new people who have either been longtime fans of our work or were just introduced to us through their friends on message boards, Facebook, or Twitter. We look to expand on that success and will continue to utilize the social media scene to post additional info, photos, videos, events, etc., and encourage others to get involved and share their own content as well. And you can follow us via the links over there, is what I said. So yes, really starting to discover the power of social media as we get into 2010. And then the next paragraph, one change for 2010 is that we have done away with our webcam per se. And what I meant by that, it wasn't just going to be updating every few minutes. It would be live over Ustream. It is no longer a static image being updated every so often, as I wrote here. Instead, we will have a live video stream playing right here on the homepage and our webcam page 24 hours a day. And I guess I meant when we're on a mission. I might have had a camera or two starting to get set up from some of our friends out on the Outer Banks. Yeah, say right here, the stream may be from my home office. Who wants to see that? Hopefully I didn't do that. Whatever. Maybe it meant outside. You want to see Mark work? That would just be boring. And a cam that we have on the NC Outer Banks. It'd be interesting to see. I don't remember what camera I had live on the Outer Banks. Now we have these Nest cams, of course, but that wasn't even a thing yet. But I mentioned it in 2010, so there it is. And of course, the HIRT, or Hurricane Track, HIRT, H-I-R-T, was the Hurricane Intercept Research Team, Chevy Tahoe. Yeah, of course, we could stream live from there. That would be through Ustream. And then I go on to say it's just something different that we can now offer to anyone who visits the site. Next paragraph, another new feature which I think will be tremendously valuable to the site is the addition of a Friday. I don't know why I did it on Friday. I guess I wanted you to go into the weekend with weather knowledge. But a Friday live video outlook and discussion. Similar to the Hurricane Outlook video that I produce daily for our premium services members, the Friday Outlook and Discussion will be broadcast live from my office, time to be determined, in parentheses there, and will be used to go over potential development areas in the Atlantic and East Pacific. I will also detail ocean temps and, yeah, I kind of just describe it here. The video will stream via Ustream live on the homepage, and this part is hilarious. And will last from 5 minutes, right? Sure. To as long as 20 minutes. That's more like it. Man, I know that people like the short form videos these days. I mean, we're in the age now of TikTok and 2 second ads on YouTube and whatever. And by the way, as a segue, or not a segue, that's when you transition. An aside, that's the word I'm looking for, a distraction. There's the commercial. It's got Charlie Day, the actor, in it, and it's a Mountain Dew commercial. I don't drink Mountain Dew, and yes, the commercial had an impact on me because I remember it, but he starts out, he's like, commercials have become shorter, and it just cuts him off, and it's the guy that does the voiceover, do the do, and he keeps, hey, I haven't even been, boom, do the do, like he can't. The point is, commercials have become shorter, and so have our attention spans, but back in 2010, I was ambitious, thinking I could get it done in 5 minutes. You know, there's a lot to talk about when you talk about the weather. And, you know, TV, typical TV weather people on broadcast television, like the news, they get 3 or 4 minutes, tops. So, anyway, that's why we have Fox Weather. And, you know, in the 80s, the Weather Channel came on because it could be 24 hours a day. But in 2010, I was hoping I could get it done in 5 minutes to as long as 20 minutes. Or whatever it takes, as I go on to say, to detail the latest goings-on in the tropics. I will post the video on Ustream.tv immediately. And that was one of the neat things, by the way. You could do these videos and then save them, and they would be in an archive, just like YouTube does. and I could link to them, and I think I could even embed them, and you could play them, and they would, you know, play, and I could keep up with how many people watch them and so forth. And then a couple other paragraphs here. I go on to discuss the premium services site and all the stuff that I do over at Premium Services. And one of the things that we did also in 09 was to develop a more robust satellite and radar animation page using NOAA satellite and radar images. I got Jason, my good friend from childhood, who became a computer programmer, still does work for us even today. He coded up 30-frame radar and satellite animations. You guys that have been with us for a long time might remember those. Now, that's just part of everything. You know, radar scope and tidbits and weather nerds. You can and Mark Nissenbaum's website that I show often. I think he's got like 250 frames or 500-frame radar loops or something. It's just nuts. You better have a serious web browser and computer and nice internet pipe to handle that. But back in 2010, I was promoting it as pretty exclusive there that we had 30 frames, because the typical NOAA and even your commercial sites like AccuWeather and Weather Bell or Weather whatever it was, I can't remember. I don't remember when Weather Bell or Weather Models and the other pay sites, those were maybe 15 frames. And I just liked the longer loops, you know, 30 frames. That was pretty cool. So I was promoting that, you know, trying to get people to sign up and crowdfund what we're doing and join the project. I mentioned our message board. We did have a message board. Don't anymore. That lasted like 1 year, maybe two. Of course, we had our C-Box, the chat. Still have that. And that's what the second-to-last paragraph here on January 1st, 2010 was talking about. And then finally, I kind of wrap things up there saying we hope that 2010 brings you much prosperity and good health. Mike Watkins, Jesse Bass, and myself, along with our good friends and colleagues who help to keep things running, look forward to providing you with the best hurricane news, information, and live reporting that we can. And, you know, I go on to sort of plant the seed that, you know, it just takes one. And we don't know where that one is going to be. In fact, I had a really interesting way of saying it. I said it right here. All it takes is the right hurricane in the wrong location and bad things can happen. That was sort of my spin on it only takes one. I just thought that was pretty clever, if I may say so myself. All it takes is the right hurricane in the wrong location and bad things can happen. Yeah, maybe we can make a bumper sticker that says that. Everybody be like, what? That's pretty somber to say. Okay. Anyway, that's what I was talking about on the first day of the year 2010. All right, so that's a look back at the beginning of the year. Let's move ahead a few months to early April 2010. And what I was talking about on the website, we're closer now to the hurricane season starting. I went to the National Hurricane Conference in Orlando, and I was going to go to the Florida Governor's Conference in May, several weeks down the road. And it's interesting because the season looked like it was going to be really busy. Dr. Klotzbach, Dr. Gray, and others on social media, because social media was certainly becoming more of a thing in 2010. People were talking about the potential of 2010 being a very active hurricane season. We had an El Nino in 2009, and that was starting to fade away, and we were headed towards more of a La Nina pattern in the Pacific and a very warm Atlantic basin, which had already been set up. And that's what I was talking about here on this blog post. Again, the Wayback Machine, pretty remarkable. The Internet Archive is another term for it, capturing these different blogs that I had posted on HurricaneTrack.com way back then, including any images that I had included in the blog post. I think that's just really, really cool. So this is from April 3rd, and the title was Cold Gulf About to Get Very Warm. And remember, I talked about this in the previous segment, that the Gulf of Mexico was quite cold, and Bill Reed was pretty certain that it was going to start to warm up, as we got into the hurricane season, as I said earlier, he referred to the sun as the big microwave in the sky will do its work, so to speak. And so I'm talking about that here in this blog post, April 3rd, 2010. I said, I'm back at the office after attending the National Hurricane Conference in Orlando. It was great to meet with people, have discussions, and see longtime friends and colleagues. Now, it is time to get ready for the upcoming hurricane season, which begins in less than 2 months. A lot of talk has been made about the very warm water that has been prevalent in the tropical Atlantic since the beginning of the year. I have written a few posts about it, and it seems that this has the potential to play quite an important role in this year's hurricane season. And of course, we know that's exactly what happened in 2010. It was very busy that year. I go on to say, however, the Gulf of Mexico still remains well below normal sea surface temps wise in most of that region. That is about to change. Take a look at the graphic below, I continue with. It is today's sea surface temperature anomaly map from NOAA NESDES. As you can clearly see, the Gulf is painted in mostly blues and even some purples, indicating significant departures from normal on the negative side, so below average there. But notice the loop current nosing its way up through the central Gulf. Also notice the positive anomalies in the Caribbean, getting warmer the farther east you go. Those two features, coupled with the strong and increasing sun angle, that's what Bill Reed was talking about, the microwave in the sky. I didn't want to steal his quote, come on, so I just said the increasing sun angle, will mean that the Gulf sea surface temperatures will be back to normal and possibly above in some places very soon. The reason the water is so cool relative to average is because of the relentless onslaught of storms this winter that brought cold air and strong winds to the open Gulf. I think that's interesting because in the years since, and certainly these last several years, kind of mixing our time scales up a little bit, we haven't had a lot of cold air intrusions into the Gulf. The Gulf has become very warm, and the last 5, 6, 7 years or so, we've had a lot of Gulf activity. Not so much back then. Interesting how things change, isn't it? Another good reason why I do this podcast. It's not just what I was doing, what the project was doing, changes we were undergoing, people, places, things that we met, did, whatever. We can also see the evolution of how patterns changed and social media and everything. It's just really neat. So I kind of picked up on that there. Very interesting back in 2010. The tropical Atlantic was going to be really warm, and so was the subtropical Atlantic eventually, but the Gulf was still very cold, even in April there of 2010. So anyway, back to what I was saying. The water is so cool again because of all of the storminess, etc. This is reversing now, and with the abundant warmth in the east and south, water temps are rebounding quickly. This is part of the overall larger picture of sea surface temperatures that are running as much as 2 degrees Celsius above normal across the entire tropical Atlantic, roughly south of 20 degrees of latitude. And of course, we know that's really a prime setup to focus upward motion, to have lower pressures in the deep tropics. You get more convergence that way, and you can spin up those tropical waves into hurricanes. And that's exactly what will go on to happen. As I have mentioned in earlier posts about this, the weaker subtropical high, or the Azores high, has led to lighter trade winds blowing across the Atlantic, thus allowing sea surface temperatures to warm to above normal levels. In fact, this is exactly what an El Nino is in the Pacific. You know, it's a lessening or a relaxing of the trade winds, and the Pacific warm pool is able to expand eastward, and you get an El Nino. And I said, perhaps there needs to be a name for the Atlantic version. Really interesting that I said that back in 2010, because we have seen the Atlantic develop this warm tongue, if you will, similar to what the equatorial Pacific will do, and sometimes people do refer to it as an Atlantic Nino, and I was talking about this even back in 2010. Just kind of interesting there. Sea surface temperatures are only part of the overall equation when dealing with tropical cyclones. While there is mounting evidence to suggest that a very busy hurricane season is coming, that was correct, it is no guarantee and no one knows, and you know, basically that's no guarantee that it will be very busy. And even if it is, no one knows where any hurricanes that do form will ultimately end up. Nonetheless, people who are looking forward to fishing, boating, and enjoying the usually warm Gulf, it's coming. So I think it's interesting. That's what I was talking about in April. And having just come back from the National Conference, learning about what people were thinking about the upcoming season. And we didn't quite yet have the Deepwater Horizon catastrophe. That would be coming up next. So not long after I posted that blog on April 3rd, it was about a little over 2 weeks later that something truly terrible happened in the Gulf of Mexico that would shake the foundations of the livelihoods of a lot of people along the Gulf Coast, the oil industry as a whole, environmental movements. I mean, it was just like, luckily the hurricanes stayed out of there. We know that now. But back then, when this happened, it was like, you have to be kidding, because we were heading towards this potential calamitous hurricane season, and now we've got this terrible explosion in the Gulf of Mexico that happened on April the 20th at the Deepwater Horizon. It's a semi-submersible mobile offshore drilling unit, and it was owned by Transocean and Drilling for British Petroleum, or BP, and it was not too far southeast of the toe of Louisiana, is one way to put it. It killed 11 people, unfortunately, from the initial explosion, and it went on to create this big spill from the whole complex setup of chain of events that led to the spill, and it was just a major catastrophe. An industrial disaster, as Wikipedia talks about here, on the 20th of April, beginning with the explosion, and it was considered to be the largest maritime oil spill in the history of the petroleum industry. And, I mean, it was just awful. It really was. So we were very worried about it from a lot of different perspectives. You know, the impact to marine life, the impact to business, industry, tourism. They had to close beaches. You know, spring break was all but ruined from the Florida Panhandle over to Tampa Bay. Clods of oil would wash up and marine life was killed. Different people that I knew went down and, you know, really volunteered and helped. Areas that I knew from hurricanes like Gulf Shores, Alabama, Biloxi, Mississippi, Gulfport, beautiful white beaches down there, you know, Destin, those areas were all just heavily impacted. And we had this looming over the area as a constant, because it took a while for everybody to, you know, get their act together and figure out how to stop this thing. It was terrible. And then in the background, this countdown to June 1st and the start of hurricane season was coming. And that really had a lot of people on edge. And I tried to avoid it. I didn't want to jump on that bandwagon of fear-mongering about the upcoming hurricane season too much. You know, it needed to be mentioned, but I didn't want to beat a drum too loudly about that topic, because what purpose would that do? That would just make people more anxious and more anxiety-ridden. You know, you get anxious to begin with, and then the anxiety just takes over you. We didn't need that. So I was very careful in how often at all that I mentioned it on the website or in any kind of an update or whatever. But I finally did so. And again, credit to the Wayback Machine snapping these snapshots at just the right times here, however they do what they do. And so we're up to May 5th, and the Horizon, the Deepwater Horizon incident has been now several weeks ongoing. And they're trying to figure things out. They had live video feeds from the bottom of the Gulf. All the major networks were carrying it. And you could just watch as the oil just spilled out into the Gulf of Mexico there from the bottom. And so eventually, we did have to face the prospect that, okay, we're in May and hurricane season's coming. and we could have a tropical system in May. All right? And, you know, we know that that's possible, and it's become even almost commonplace again in the years since 2010, especially from about 2015, 2016 on. We've had early season development more often than not outside of June through November. Well, the June part really for early season, right? So here I am, a morning update on May 5th, 2010. And my headline is Oil Slick versus Hurricanes, a race against time. And, you know, to my credit, I thought that was a pretty well-written headline. It was very to the point. It was not hyperbolic and over the top. It was not sensational. It was very to the point. And it was. It was a race against time. And what's going to happen? The question on a lot of people's minds, and few people wanted to ask it. Again, I think the Weather Channel did a good job of kind of not jumping on that as well. I do remember that. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, anybody else. It was just more the environmental catastrophe that was already happening. So why even begin to speculate just yet on what hurricanes might do? But it began to become time, as I said, to start to address the elephant in the room, as they say, right? And or in this case, the oil-slicked pelican in the room. You know, not trying to be funny. I mean, that's what it was. There was all kinds of waterfowl and turtles, you know, fish that would be killed. And it was just horrible. I remember how anxious so many of us were, all the people that I knew along the Gulf Coast that I met because of hurricanes and just their livelihoods. It was awful. It really was. So here we were, knocking on the door there of hurricane season. So I open the paragraph here with, it is a race against time in the Gulf of Mexico. And not just for the obvious reasons that you may think. Not only is the effort to mitigate the impact of the oil leak, is that critical in terms of actually stopping the leak and cleaning up the mess, it is also a race against the hurricane clock. As you know, hurricane season officially begins on June 1st. Obviously, the folks working in the Gulf to solve the crisis know this too. So, what are the odds that a hurricane will form sometime during the remainder of this month? May. All right, so then I go on to talk about looking at a chart from Dr. Chris Lanzi from his work at the Hurricane Research Division. There have been 18 tropical storms to form during the month of May since 1851. Note that in 07, there was subtropical storm Andrea in early May. So just a few years prior. Of those tropical storms, four went on to become hurricanes. The strongest of those hurricanes was Abel. They named him Abel, Baker, Charlie, and whatever. The alternating male female names didn't start until the late 70s, but whatever. So Abel in 1951, which became a Category 3 hurricane just off the Outer Banks in North Carolina. So at least it wasn't in the Gulf. The earliest in the year that has ever happened. So the earliest hurricane in the year was Abel, and I put a little screenshot of our old tracking map embedded in there, the old interactive map that we used to have that was a series of JPEGs and GIF images and whatnot, and there's old Abel in there, and it was off the coast of North Carolina, of all places. How about that? No hurricanes have hit the United States during the month of May. Bottom line, the odds greatly favor not having a hurricane form over the next few weeks based solely on past data. However, past data does not always dictate the future. I think they say that in financial disclosures, don't they? Yes, they do. Though it can be a handy guide. Let's look now at the pattern over the next 2 weeks for clues as to what might happen. According to the GFS computer model, upper-level winds at 120 hours through next week are forecast to remain highly unfavorable for development across the Gulf of Mexico and the Western Caribbean. Even a look at the 10-day forecast. Look at me, even back then, was very careful. You know, at least it shows I'm consistent, right? That I didn't, you know, it's 240 hours out and we're all going to, you know, perish. And I'll give myself credit. You know, I learned from the good people at the Hurricane Center, my colleagues over the years, how to read the models and so forth. So anyway, little pat myself on the back there. I've stayed true to the science all these years. Anyway, sorry, I got distracted there. You can't blame me, because so many people do that now with social media. It's just become, you know, an infectious disease almost. And I avoid it. I have avoided it. And there's the proof, captured by the Wayback Machine. All right, so enough of that. 10-day forecast shows strong westerly winds over the Gulf, but you do notice the possibility of an upper-level high building over the southwest Caribbean. This is fairly far out in time for the model to resolve accurately. Man, I wrote so eloquently back then. But that pattern does look hostile for development between now and May 15th. What about after that time period? Then I get into the GFS indication of the MJO and how maybe around May 20th, the MJO could start to become more favorable. And then I go on to finish it up with, obviously no one can stop a hurricane if it is going to come, but being able to sniff out the development chances will at least help to give as much advance warning as possible for the efforts underway on the sea as well as on shore. I'll have more here on Monday morning. So that's interesting. Yeah, you know, that I sort of jumped into eventually talking about the Deepwater Horizon situation. It, you know, became also known as the BP oil spill, and used some facts, right? History, some climatology, and quoting people that are very well-respected in their field, Dr. Chris Lancey and his work. And as we know, nothing happened in the Gulf of Mexico tropical cyclone-wise to speak of, not in May and even not during the entire hurricane season. We did have some activity, and we will get into that once we talk about the actual hurricane season itself. So before I wrap up this episode, that's May 5th. Let me just look through the Wayback Machine timeline. There's another one here from May the 7th. And so let's just click on this. I'm going to do this sort of live as it happens kind of thing and just reveal what's up. And because I want to quit this episode, so to speak, once we get into June, right? Because then we need to talk about the season as a whole, different chunks at a time. And, you know, so we can divide 2010 up into multiple episodes, right? So, yeah, so there is a May 7th entry on the Wayback Machine, but when I click on it, it takes me back to May 5th. So that's fine. Let's just jump ahead. Let's see, there's June 7th. We can do that. We'll spill into the hurricane season by a week. Let's see what we get. Oh, look at this. So it says June 7th, but it pops up to May 26th. And then it shows on my blog May 24th. I don't know how this works. I'm glad it's there. I'll take whatever I can get. So this will be perfect. We're at May 24th, basically a week before the hurricane season begins. All right. So what am I talking about? May 24th, 2010. Evidently, there was a large ocean storm off the southeast coast, not likely to pose too much of a threat to land. I go on to open this up here, this blog post. This is at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, May 24th. The storm system that most computer models predicted would form has indeed done so and is still sitting well off the coast of the southeast United States. Latest satellite images show that it has become better organized overall but lacks a core of deep thunderstorms. In other words, the storm is quite spread out and does not appear to be getting too strong too quick. While it is an interesting feature to watch on satellite, it should pose little problems. That's not really well written, but whatever. It should pose little problems for the coast as it remains offshore, just kind of looping around. Kind of like my writing there, just looping around. I do not see anything in the major computer models that leads me to believe that this will ever affect land. At least I spelled that right with an A, affect, land directly. So does this existence, does this low's existence at all mean we are definitely in for a rough hurricane season? It is my opinion that it does not. Why? First of all, the storm system formed because of a larger scale weather system originating off the North American continent. So, you know, we get those pieces of energy that come off and, you know, they get cut off lows or whatever. We know how that works. It was a product of an upper level environment more than anything and not the true due to a tropical wave. This is important because the tropical waves, which are born over Africa in most cases, have a lot of heat energy associated with them. This results in the subsequent tropical storm hurricane being warm core, with the strongest winds closest to the center. In the case of the system over the Atlantic today, its winds are far more removed and spread out and not concentrated. It's interesting because they didn't call it a subtropical storm, and I didn't even mention that in here. We know that they do that now. I'll have to look that up. I thought they started doing that in like 02 or something. I'm sorry, I can't remember, but like, when did the National Hurricane Center officially adopt calling something subtropical? I mean, because whatever this was sounded subtropical to me, and I don't even mention that in this blog post, but that's fine. However, if it were later in the hurricane season, there would be more of a chance for this system to transition to warm core by taking advantage of the much warmer water temps. Bottom line, while it is likely to be an active hurricane season, I do not see this system as being a symptom of such. There you go. That was some better writing. When we get true tropical development, that will be the sign that the horse has left the barn. Throwing some metaphors out there, huh? I'll have more here throughout the week. So there you go. Oh, and by the way, I ended it with, I am currently in Fort Lauderdale for the Florida Hurricane Conference. That's the Florida Governor's Conference. And we'll post updates here and on our Facebook and Twitter pages. All right, well, that gets us up to the precipice of the beginning of the 2010 Atlantic hurricane season, which we will start to cover in the next episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. But before I let you go, let's at least take a look at the preseason forecast, sort of set the stage for what I will talk about in the next episode here. All the way back to December 2009, TSR, that's tropical storm risk, generally indicating an above average season with, we'll just call it 14-7-3, and with an ACE of 135. Colorado State University, they did cite the rather strong El Nino that was going on in 09, but they thought that was unlikely to persist through the hurricane season of 2010. So they had an average projection there of 11 to 16 named storms, 6 to 8 hurricanes, 3 to 5 major hurricanes with an ACE of anywhere from 100 to 162. And then as we got into January, the Weather Company, formerly WSI, Weather Services International or something like that, they issued a forecast in January of 2010, and they were calling for 13 named storms, 7 hurricanes, 3 major hurricanes. Then in April at the National Hurricane Conference, Colorado State had another update, and they upped their forecast to 15 named storms, 8 hurricanes, 4 majors, and an ACE of 150. More confidence in the weakening of the El Nino was cited, and it looked like it was going to be a very busy season. TSR basically kept their forecast at their late May release. North Carolina State University jumped in, starting to forecast hurricanes. They were calling for a fairly busy season. NOAA had a forecast at the end of May. They were calling for an active to extremely active year, anywhere up to 23 named storms forecast, 8 to 14 hurricanes, referencing, again, a continuation of the active era that began in 1995. So, all in all, it looked like the stage was set for a very busy 2010 hurricane season. Of course, we know that is exactly what happened. So we'll get into the details of the 2010 season, and what all happened and didn't happen, and the one field mission that we undertook, that was Earl. We'll talk about that and some other interesting tidbits along the way in the next episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. As always, thanks for tuning in. I do appreciate it very, very much. I appreciate your feedback, whether you email me or comment in Patreon or on our Discord. I do appreciate it. It's great to have your feedback. Keep it coming. It does help to motivate me as I tell you these stories going back now almost 30 years. All right? That is it from me again. You know this. I am Mark Suddeth. Hurricane Track. It's good to have you. I'll talk to you again next week.